The opinions expressed are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the official positions of the sponsors, advertisers, or presenters. Advertising does not imply endorsement by the sponsors and presenters.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Lighting Controls Podcast. We have another fantastic episode and fantastic guests for you today. But before we dive into everything, I just want to let everyone know, if you haven't been paying attention, this February is going to be an action-packed month on the podcast. We have some absolutely stellar guests lined up. So make sure you're paying attention to all of the updates and all the podcasts coming out this month, because it is just going to be absolutely fantastic. Before we dive into the conversation, let me take a second to remind everyone that today's episode is presented by the LCA, the Lighting Controls Association.
And it's financially supported by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Normally, I talk about our website, but at this point, hopefully you've checked it out by now, lightingcontrolspodcast.com. The other thing that I want to mention is that we just started up a council with Nailed to address startup technicians and integrators, the Council on Startup Technicians and Integrators. If you want to get involved, support the group, or just give us some kudos, please reach out. We'd love to hear from you. We're really trying to reach out to the community and get more involved and give guidance so that people such as our guest today can be more readily found and worked with on projects, because we think it's a really critical element that often gets overlooked. So again, that's the Council on Startup Technicians and Integrators. Other than that, let's get into it. So today we've got a special guest, Bill Ellis. Bill, do you mind just giving us a quick breakdown on who you are and what you do?
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me today. Lighting Systems Integrator, we're a specialty contractor. We're located down in lovely Central Florida. We work all over the country. We work in a variety of markets, all on the commercial side, but gaming, theme park, hotel, large hospitality, convention center, museums, theaters, and what we like to call unusual things, bridges, monuments, parks, and stuff like that. We're going to be 25 years old May 1st. We work with several major manufacturers and are here to put the pieces and parts together to create the visions, bring the visions to life on the technical side for a project.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, it's always great to have you on our podcast. Not that you've been on before, but it's always great to have people like you on our podcast. I mean, you know, integrators are really kind of the lifeblood of these custom lighting designs. And so getting you on here is part of an outreach effort on Ron and my behalf, because we think that, you know, getting people more aware of and familiar with integrators is really critical. So would you mind just giving us a quick definition? I know the definition is just so all over the board when it comes to who you talk to, but what is an integrator?
So the way we look at it is we're the glue that puts the pieces together. So you have control systems sitting on one side and you have lighting fixtures sitting on the other side. And then there's some other interesting stuff sitting in the background over here. And it used to be really simple. You had a dimmer, and all it took was two wires going to the light fixture. And where we saw our business explode was when LEDs really came onto the scene, and it started becoming, it's not just about two wires anymore. There's two wires and a cable. So it's power and it's control signal of some type. And there's multiple different types of control signals involved, and we'll see three or four of them on a given project. So we're that expertise that goes to run this fixture here, this type of signal needs to go through. And the way our company operates, we take on the full responsibility start to finish. So the resources that we have here to bring to the project is we figure out the engineering side, what type of signal's got to get where, and what hardware that's going to require over here. On the lighting side, hey, what does the distributor or whoever's supplying the lighting fixtures need to supply, power supplies, drivers, widgets, anything like that to make all that work? Work with the electrical contractor, because, you know, particularly when you get into casinos, theaters, stuff like that, they might do one of these every 4 or 5 years. We live and breathe this every single day. So we're that on-site expertise that is there to help them stay out of trouble, help us all make money and create a successful project. We are a 508A panel shop, and we fabricate, put stuff together, and we program the systems and provide that aftermarket support. So it encompasses that whole thing. And then there's the other stuff sitting in the background over here. Hey, we want our lighting system connected to the building management system because we want the aux sensors to tell the HVAC system when to turn down. We want to be connected to the utility so that when they're raising the utility rates because of demand, we can roll back our lighting consumption so that we don't get hit with those extra fees. The audio guys want to have some interaction where they run a piece and the lighting responds, or video, whatever the case may be. And of course, we get into our theme parks, and there's all sorts of stuff that required. We have connected lighting systems to bowling alleys and gaming systems before, so that when somebody has a strike or hits a jackpot or something like that, the whole building responds and creates the experience. Sensors that create interaction, that when the public does something, they step in a particular place, they press a particular pad or something, the lighting system responds. And having all that knowledge and knowing how to put all those pieces and parts together on a typical lighting system in a project. So we look at it as that glue, and it more and more it becomes that essential part on that project that everybody, the owner gets kind of I got to pay for something else. And then they get to the end. And we usually get some really positive feedback like, wow, you saved us. You got our building open on time and took care of a whole lot of problems. We'll keep this in mind in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great in-depth explanation of integrations. And I think, the benefit there really is, from what both Ron and I have heard and experienced, it really is sort of you save the day in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. And even retroactively, sometimes where a project is spiraling out of control and they didn't have an integrator involved, you kind of step in and say, okay, this is where things are going wrong. And so, the question here is like, why aren't integrators more consistently on lighting projects?
Well, when you think about it with LED world, we're still kind of in a relatively new phase. Electricians, the way we've been handling lighting was one way for, well over 100 years. And it's really in the last 12 to 15 years that this has really gotten so complicated. As I say all the time, we try to take the science project out of it and provide a consistent way to deploy a system. It is sometimes everybody thinks the electrical engineer is going to supply all the information and put together, or the lighting designer is going to put it together, or the manufacturer's rep, or maybe even the manufacturer. And they all have their silos that they're living in and go, no, you didn't pay me for that. Or no, I only sold you this part of the equipment, so I'm not responsible for what's going on with the lighting fixtures. So it was kind of this niche that we stumbled into and carved out, and like I said, 25 years come May 1st, holy cow, doing this. And I'm thrilled at the type of projects we get to work on every single day.
It's interesting. Go ahead.
So going back to that, it's just this, do you need my services on every project? Do you need an integrator on every single project that you do? No, you don't. There's a lot of energy management systems and office buildings, different types of projects along that line where it's a really straightforward thing. The electrical engineer, probably with some help from a manufacturer or a manufacturer rep and all, has put some details in. And they can put together the project. The electrical contractor probably understands it and get enough tech support, and they're really successful. It's when it starts getting into some, and like I said, when you look at the type of facilities that we work in, the museums, large hotel hospitality, casinos, and theme parks and all. There's so many other elements that come together that you go, hey, we need that specialty to help put this all together. And it's an education process. You know, you what you guys are doing here and helping to explain to the lighting world all the different pieces and parts that are involved and how firms like myself are able to provide that glue to get that project. But you don't need us on every single project.
No, not on every project, but you did bring up a couple of great points that I want to hit on. So one of the things that we like to ask a lot of our guests is, because there are so many potential entities that are responsible for lighting controls, there's no right or wrong answer, and we understand that, but we do like to ask, just given your experience, who do you feel is best suited to be responsible for the lighting controls design?
You know, I think it takes inputs. I think it takes inputs from several. So we are at times getting involved with projects earlier in the design. We're getting ready to kick off a museum project that we've been working on for a while. And we were brought in to do the lighting control design because the lighting designer went, well, this is too much for us. But we needed to know what the design intent was from them. What had they sold the owner first on, knowing, and you know, what the program for the various areas in the building are, so that we could then start figuring out what that control intent translates and then translate it to the hardware. And then it was get that information down to, you know, so it was take all this information in from everybody, make some decisions, and push all that information back out again. There was six different entities involved getting that information back out and fill that in. So, you know, simpler systems, there are a lot of qualified people. Your manufacturer rep, of course, the manufacturer rep, depending on the size of the firm, might be only covering one or two control manufacturers, or might have seven or eight. So it gives you, you know, you're kind of going to get locked into a manufacturer specific solution, which at times works just fine. No issue with that at all. Using a system integrator, you know, while we have a couple of dominant manufacturers that we work with a lot of manufacturers. And yep. So we can bring pieces and parts in that best suit the need of the project. And we aren't, we don't get ourselves locked into a specific solution. And it's not only just, hey, we bring lighting pieces, we use a lot of industrial control hardware. Of course, there's a whole world in networking, you know, and other pieces like that, that might create the unique solution for the project, because we think and work outside of just the lighting envelope. No great, you know, this is the entity that's always responsible. We've seen electrical engineer firms do real good with designs on systems. We've seen it come out of lighting design firms that have someone on staff that is really control centric. You know, on our theater projects, we see a whole separate consultant. Our theater consultant will take on that responsibility. Sometimes they'll work with the architectural designer and merge that together. Or we'll see, you know, in the theater, the house lighting system, the architectural is something completely separate from the theatrical. In the end, everybody finds they'll fight tooth and nail, but it's like, guys, it's all got to work together in the end. You know, they're going to stay in their separate camps. But when it's time to raise the curtain, it kind of all has to go together.
I could not agree more. I know Webster feels the same way. It's so nice to talk to another integrator who feels the same exact way. It's like, I feel like we could just talk for hours, but that's beside the point. So you mentioned education, which has obviously been a huge part of what we talk about all the time. And you hit on a lot of points, even just now revolving back to that. So I guess one of the big questions is, how do you feel that we can sort of fix some of the gap that we hit now with, so how do we get integrators when required on projects? How do we get integrators involved sooner? Because that seems to be one of the biggest stumbling blocks on a lot of projects.
I think it's that outreach. I mean, with what you guys have done, I've done it myself. I've backed off a little bit right now. I've got to get my mojo going again. But you know, having presented at different conferences, on various topics, integration and, you know, control protocols and different things like that. And, you know, provide that information out there, to our community, to the various elements of our lighting community, that something like this exists. Now, yeah, most of the time, I think they look at it as, oh, this is going to be something that ends up in a specification division, and goes out for bid and we'll list some. But there are those other projects. Like I said, this one museum that we're working on, we're starting to see it in a couple other places, where, hey, we need somebody to actually help put those drawings and that specification section together for this element, because we know we're going to run into stumbling blocks. In the theater community, we're seeing our services used in a different way, where we're basically kind of this consultant contractor. Hey, you are responsible for testing that the fixtures from this guy and the control system from this guy are going to work together. You're going to help resolve electrical issues, control issues, acoustic issues and stuff. And because nobody else was taking responsibility, then we're going to bring you back later and you're going to make sure that stuff got connected correctly, that it got addressed and configured correctly, on the fixture side, so it's compatible with the control system, and help do that glue work, except that we're not supplying any gear. We're basically just providing all the smarts. So a little different aspect to that, but it's, through various outreach, whether it's through trade organizations, things like that. And I had done a lot of presentation work. We all experienced what we went through with COVID and tried to keep it up. And it's like, okay, I've gotten some other stuff taken care of. It's time to get back out there and contribute to this cause, for lack of a better way.
Well, anyway, I'm going to actually pull this back to something that you just subtly mentioned in your spiel that I want to get people a little more familiar with, because I think it's a really critical element that gets overlooked a lot. UL 508. You said you're a UL 508 shop. Would you mind explaining what that is?
Yeah. So, there's a program, under a couple of different NERDLs, nationally recognized testing laboratories. And the biggest one that everybody knows is UL, Underwriters Laboratory. And Underwriters owns the vast majority of the safety standards that product is built and tested and recognized under, that, hey, when it is put out into the masses, it is safe. It's not going to hurt anybody. And in the industrial control world, wastewater treatment plants, manufacturing facilities, and all, it's not the same product every single time. So Underwriters Laboratory, they created a program, UL508A. So UL508 is industrial enclosures, and 508A is industrial control panels. And as a 508A entity, you are allowed to build panels using recognized or listed components, assemble them together. There is a requirement for documentation, and then testing. And when you're done with that, you're able to put a NERDL label. And our program, we work under Intertech, which is a different nationally recognized testing laboratory. Mm-hmm. So that basically, when that component ends up in the field, and the AHJ, the authority having jurisdiction, comes by, they look at that panel and go, oh, I see a listing for it. There's a label on it that tells that inspector this product is safe. It's been built to a recognized standard and is safe. So we got into this. I think we've been at it for about 10 years now because all these LED systems were science projects. They still are science projects. I got a box of, everybody calls drivers, but they're power supplies, and there's boxes of controllers, and there might be some other interfaces for emergency or something. And we took on responsibility and would panelize that. Instead of it being, you know, we're going to screw this down to a piece of plywood that's going to go somewhere up in the ceiling and everything. It's going to kind of get ad hoc wired in the field and all. We brought those components in, built them into panels. Mr. Contractor, here's where the power comes in. Here's where the lights go out. Here's where the control signal comes in. And then it evolved. You know, we have more control hardware on these systems now, and we do a lot with control racks, 19-inch equipment racks, and everything mounts up and stuff. But there was other needs where stuff needed to be in panels. Some of our theme park attractions, our bridges and monuments, where we don't have electric closets, our stuff is living out in, you know, hanging under the structure above a river or something like that. So it opened up another avenue of business for us in that we take these control components, mount them, do all this pre-wiring. And as we work with all of our projects, it's not only wiring it and building it, but try to program and configure it, and test it and all. And that when it leaves here, we know that all the components within that enclosure work. And they are configured for the job and they are safe. And that's the biggest thing. But, we have worked to make it easier on the people building the buildings out there in that we've removed that science project. Sometimes, the environment, you cannot just mount everything to a piece of plywood and stick it on a wall somewhere because there's public going by, or there's machinery or something going by, and you just can't have wires hanging out. So that's how we got into that. It has created some very unique opportunities for us. It's a service that has lent well to a variety of projects as we go along. But it's another part of that integration aspect, because once again, we're taking control hardware, we're taking these drivers and other pieces that are on the fixture side and integrating it and putting it all together so it functions the way designers have sold the project to the end customer and create that pretty picture.
Well, and I think that that's really an interesting component to the way that integrators operate when it comes to lighting controls, because, the majority of integrators, I would say, are not a UL 508 shop. And so that's right. An ad service that you found to be quite helpful. I'm sure there are a number of people who are going, well, why would you do that? Why don't you just ask the manufacturer to provide you a panel?
There are manufacturers that are capable of it, but when you think about it, most manufacturers are geared to push number of units out the door. Their goal is to roll 800 pieces of product A, 600 of product B, and 1,000 of product C off the line every week on the pallet shipped out the door. And they have their thing. Going back, because we work with various manufacturers, we can take the components that we need, not just from lighting, but from the industrial world and other elements, and put it together to meet the needs of the project, really integrate all those components that are needed. When I started doing it, it was a little bit scary. It was more of, hey, how do I get paid for this? And we figured out how we get paid for this. And so that's what's made it worthwhile. And every time I give the nickel tour through our facility and we stop at that part and show what we're capable of, people are always amazed. My manufacturers that come through and see and go, wow, this is this is great because we're geared up to just push those units out the door, and you can take some of those units and provide those other pieces and solve that project for the customer. Heck, sometimes we have taken these panels and we've sold them back to that manufacturer to put on the job because we're geared up to fix that problem that they need, rather than them trying to take care of it themselves in-house.
Which goes back to your point of it being an experiment in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there are definitely manufacturers that through, you know, no fault of their own, they're stuck in the same cycle that everybody else is as a result of just, okay, we know this works 90% of the time, so we're going to ship it. But then that 10% of the time, who picks up that end and makes sure that right. it's carried forward? And so in your case, you know, you're basically recognizing in those 10% instances, we're prepared to handle that.
Correct. And particularly, you know, there are those types of projects out there. I think the best example are some of the aesthetic projects on bridges and monuments where mm-hmm. You don't have an electric room. You know, it is out there. We've got a park 15 miles north of us here, and you go and you look for clusters of bushes, and you look around the corner from the bush, and there's a rack with a panel, and we're operating the lighting in that section of the park for them, and create these unique experiences. It's, you know, mm-hmm. that's a city park. It's wonderful. Nobody has to pay to go with. They're not shelling out money to go visit, you know, one of our mascots here in town. And, you know, it's more and more about these experiences, and that particular city recognizes that. We just renovated their fountain system. We integrated the whole fountain control into what we were doing lighting in the rest of the park and all, and scrambled to get it done for the holidays and created a unique experience for the entire public. And it was just, you know, bring the kids down one night and watch the fountain shows that were created. And, you know, it was paid for with their tax dollars already. Can't beat it, you know.
So I'm curious, so what's the biggest challenge when you get into some of those, you know, bridges and parks where you have to put enclosures? What's been one of the biggest challenges you face with, whether it's the contractor or owner, when you start explaining to them, hey, we're going to put this enclosure out here, but just so you're aware, this enclosure is going to need AC and depending on location, possibly heat, because, hey, these drivers are only listed to 104 degrees. And in this NEMA 4X enclosure, it's going to hit 120 or 130. So what's been the biggest sort of challenge or stumbling block when something like that, where it's maybe not captured on the front end by the engineer or anybody?
We show up there, and, you know, I was out in another city last week and having some of those same discussions, and we become that trusted expert. You know, we brought this guy in from Central Florida. And I think that's helped the business a lot in the long run is, you know, if you're from New York and LA, everybody gets it, you know, and a few years ago, everybody went, wow, look at everything that they do down there in Central Florida. Holy cow. Takes a lot of people to make that stuff happen and all. So mm-hmm. we come in and it goes back to education. You're going to spend all this money on this system. And we are just as interested in that system working day in and day out for you. But to do that, you know, there's some extra things that need to be thought about here because the vast majority of the gear that we deal with, at least on the lighting side, is really built for indoor application, not outdoor application. Yeah, we've got the exterior fixtures, but distribution, you know, signal distribution hardware and all, that's where we get into working in the whole industrial world because we use industrial grade Ethernet switches when we're building a network, particularly like when it's on a bridge because we have to deal with vibrations. Yes. That structure is constantly moving on us, and all that kinetic energy is getting transmitted down through all of our gear. But it's explaining to that owner, you're going to spend all this money. This in the overall isn't a whole lot more money to provide the proper environmental conditioning to keep the system alive and running. Is it going to run forever? No. Mother Nature, you know, we operate the Sunshine Skyway Bridge down in outside of St. Petersburg. It gets hit by lightning 12 to 15 times a year. Every now and then, a piece of gear does get damaged. The whole team worked really hard and not only surge suppression, but actual lightning protection to be able to take that energy when Mother Nature throws it at the structure and dissipate it down so it doesn't bother the gear. But Mother Nature will always win. So, you know, we want to help as much as possible to keep things working, but realize it won't be 100% perfect. You're still going to have to deal with some stuff. And I think that's an important point for designers and electrical engineers and such and architects when talking with owners. They get all these grandiose, they have these grandiose ideas of what they want their building to look like and all, and it will look really nice. It's going to, you know, be spectacular on opening day, but what's it going to look like a year from now or 2 years from now? And that yep. You need to plan for that maintenance and that upkeep, because particularly if you're dealing with stuff outdoor, Mother Nature is going to win somehow, some way, and some attention is going to need to be paid to it so that you maintain the quality of that product, the quality of that building. The indoor systems, yeah, you've got a better, but you know, living here in Central Florida, we're in the lightning capital of the world. You know, so we've had to engineer to deal with those circumstances, and it's the way we build everything. It doesn't matter where it's going in the country. We go, we can make it survive in Central Florida. It's probably going to survive anywhere in the country, and for that matter, a good chunk of the world. I would be curious about Southern Africa because they beat us out just a little bit and lightning hits, but.
But I mean, that's a further kind of argument for the integrator discussion, because of the fact that, you know, otherwise who's asking these questions, who's going, okay, how is it going to be standing mm-hmm. for so many years down the road? And additionally, like you said, you know, Mother Nature will eventually win out. It's not a question of how to prevent it, but what happens when you can't prevent it. And so right. having you on speed dial, essentially, to address it when finally it gives in.
Yeah, I mean, we do everything we can to minimize the impact. But, you know, sometimes it's going to happen. You know, we had a building and it gave us a run for about 2 years. And we were lucky because it wasn't just lighting control that got taken out. It was fire alarm and building management and other stuff. And it was, the lightning was hitting all over the structure. I mean, it sits on about 60 acres and it was hitting various points, but it was always taking out all the respective gear in one corner of the building. I mean, we fixed the same panel, I think, 8 times. And finally, the owner hired a lightning expert, never knew they existed. And came in and said, yeah, the air is getting ionized off the central energy plant, the big chiller tower sitting out back, and it's making the site a hotbed for lightning. You've created such the perfect conduit to ground that Mother Nature is just thrilled to come and visit you every single time. And it is the funniest thing. There is this 2-foot diameter silver spear with these spikes coming off of it. And it takes all that spurious energy, sucks it down out of the atmosphere. Knock on wood, I think we're going on 14 or 15 years and we haven't touched that lighting panel since.
Wow.
Well, so as much as we did to try to prevent it, we still couldn't win. It took somebody else to solve the real core issue.
Well, and I think that even furthers a different argument, but of the same vein, which is, you know, while it's great to think that we know everything there is to know, or people in general know everything there is to know, there are experts out there that can really address the issues, but it costs. I mean, you know, that lightning expert, I'm sure, wasn't free. And as a result, they had their problem resolved, but it goes back to that question of who's the expert. And so in the cases of lighting controls, yes, can somebody do lighting controls enough to be able to do a successful project? Yeah. But there are going to be those situations that you need a specialist integrator involved. You might need that UL508A custom panel developed for the project. And so that's another reason why we have a variety of integrators. It's not just one integrator doing one thing.
Well, and, we've talked about hardware, but the other huge aspect to this is how does the user who is yes. not trained in any of this stuff interact mm-hmm. with their system? Because, we're all used to working on these magical, wonderful devices here. And so as much as the hardware is an important aspect of our business, it's also the way we program not only the back end, but that user interface. How are they going to interact with the system? Mm-hmm. So the great example, once again, is the bridges. They are, it is a bridge engineer, a guy that is, trained in civil engineering or possibly structural or something, that has been assigned, hey, you are responsible for deciding what the bridge looks like every single night. And you've got, there's this palette of stuff that they built. And so you've got to go schedule how the bridge works. So we have to build an interface that the three of us will go, yeah, I can do this in my sleep, but for them, it could be kind of scary. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be very logical, intuitive to them. And that's a whole nother aspect of the integration side of things is, hey, it's not just getting all the hardware together and be able to talk, but then how do we get the people using the system to work with it and do those tasks? And particularly when it comes, you take a monument or a structure, and when the actions happened over in Eastern Europe a year and a half ago, or I think it's almost 2 years now, the phone was ringing off the hook. Hey, we want to show our support, and we want our bridge, our monument, our building, whatever, these colors tonight. Tonight, it's got to be tonight. Right. And it's like, not scary. Remember those user presets that we built? You go in and you can see the color picker, and we would recommend you pick this here and pick that there and save that. And remember, now that's user preset number 4, and put that on the schedule. And if you want to run that for the next week, the next month, whatever, put user number 4 and you're honoring. We had the USA Marathon trials here last weekend. We had the Pro Bowl and other stuff. So all of downtown Orlando, various buildings, was all in red, white, and blue. Mm-hmm. Fly the colors, and it was great. Well, it took coordination from the city to make sure that, hey, we're all want to be red, white, and blue, but hopefully for everybody, whether it was a building engineer or a facilities manager, or it could just be the receptionist, had an easy time going, oh, I need the building to be red, white, and blue for this week to honor this. And it was a very simple thing for them to select and do. So, while we talk about, we all love to talk about our hardware and all the software and user interfaces, just as important, if not more important, because if they aren't comfortable using the system, then why do we do all this work if it's not going to get used? It's got to be intuitive to them so that they are going to be thrilled to put this, building on display, monument, do this production. Our theme parks and even our casinos, a lot of that stuff is can runs. A lot of effort's gone into getting it built and running it time and time to work out all the bugs. It's more the exterior stuff that we really need to think about. Hey, how are our users? And they, has anybody read the manual for this? No one. So our system needs to be just as intuitive.
Yeah.
You know, if I always look at, if we can't train you to use the touch screen in 5 minutes or whatever interface we've built, web page, whatever, mm-hmm. you can't understand in 5 minutes, we didn't do our job correctly.
So just a fun question for you. How many times have you been asked to do black and gold?
More than you think, partly because, you know, we have this university on the other side of town whose team's color are black and gold. So
right.
We get asked that a lot. I also like when they ask for brown or gray.
Oh, yeah.
That's always, always another fun one.
So what is your response to that?
So, hey, we could do the gold. Great. No problem. You do realize that black means that the lights are off. And you just let that sit there for a second or two, and you'll see the wheels spin. And they go, oh, so that would be a problem. I'm like, well, no. It could be a design choice, but it means that your structure, or at least a good chunk of it's not going to be seen. So let's talk about a different way to do this. Pride Week presents a big problem with that, because mm-hmm. it's not just about the rainbow, but it's about the other parts of it. And so, you know, we've had to come up with creative ways to do, you know, hey, you can't do black, just, you know, it's right. just going to be off. But, you know, there is no such thing as brown light, right. you know, or gray, you know. Yep. So let's figure out a different way. What can we put in and get this expressed? And sometimes it comes down, you know, particularly after the design team has left and we're still supporting the project. I mean, we support projects that we installed 20 plus years ago that come back, and we have to be that design element at that point because we're that trusted source. They know to call us to help and work them through and try to figure out a different way of expressing that message that they want to get across.
Well, we're almost out of time here, so I just want to package this up. But I mean, it's really good stuff. I know. Every time I feel like, you know, we reach out to so many people and they're like, what are we going to talk about for 45 minutes? It's like, oh, just wait. but yeah, so I mean, you know, really good stuff as far as lighting controls goes. I mean, as far as where you're concerned, I mean, you're an integrator. You're all over the country. You do custom innovation, custom panels, custom programming. But, you know, from your perspective, you're not necessary on every single project out there. In fact, if you were used on every single project, that would probably be way too much work for you to be able to handle.
Yep.
And so,
yep.
you know, as far as things go, you know, there's like layers to integrators out there, and there's levels to integrators. And I would probably put you at the far end of the spectrum of custom. You know, if I want something very precise and specific, you're the guy to go to, but not for my, you know, run of the mill office building that's just going to have on offer code minimum requirements. You know, it's not to say that you couldn't do it. It's just more of like,
right.
you know, why are you being involved in this? What ad service are you providing to this? And granted, you would probably be a fantastic ad service to that project to make sure, because as you said, you're the glue that holds everything together. And yep. if push comes to shove, personally, people like you would be on every single lighting project, because right now it is sort of a right. finger pointing game when it comes to lighting controls, especially when it's those details that people aren't thinking through or coordinating. And so, and then as you get more involved, like with a building automation system or campus wide integrations or city wide coordination efforts, you know, having that person who can be on speed dial for when Ukraine goes to war, hey, how do I change my lights? Otherwise, it's like, who do I call? Who am I calling?
Right.
And so you're really that central component to everything when it comes to lighting controls.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we're seeing it even your high school auditoriums. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the high school auditoriums want LED. So we're building big control systems. I mean, you know, it used to be low hundred thousands dollar jobs for high school auditoriums, and we're seeing them approach seven figures now because right, they yep. want the robotics and the LED and everything. And, you know, so the control system's gotten a little bit more expensive, but the fixture package and then putting that whole thing together and making sure it all works, it's all cabled correctly and things like that. So yeah, your simple office building, we're not the guy. But hey, it needs to tie to building management system. And so it's got to talk to this backnet, and we're putting all the building services onto a central network. So now there's a whole other aspect for us to integrate to, is somebody else owns the network that's providing all that communication, and we're going to talk across the network. So how do we talk to the IT guys to get our data over to their data and vice versa? So that becomes the scale of the project when, you know, there's a whole list of questions and going, who's going to provide all these answers and make all this happen? That's where we become a valuable asset.
And on top of that, I mean, something you said as well, which is really important, is, you know, it's not just about what happens when you turn the keys over to the owner, but 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, you know, your responsibility is really going, what happens if this gets hit by lightning? What happens if a hurricane blows through here? What happens if somebody takes a baseball bat and smashes everything to pieces?
How do you reach the gear? Just, you know, it used to be to change the lamp. But still, you know, we have electronic components that are going to fail. So how does somebody reach that driver when it does fail? A lot of people go, want to care, you know, that's not my problem. I'm not going to be here. I don't have to worry about that. Our firm doesn't look at it that way. You know, we need to look at all these aspects, because it could be my guys that are having to come back out and try to get to that driver and replace it, because they want us to take care of it.
Yeah. Well, Bill, I can tell you right now that for everyone listening, we are definitely going to have you back on.
I would love to come back. How fun.
There's plenty of stuff we did not get to. Obviously, network security was a big, we didn't even touch on networking and network security. We didn't touch on remote access and how you guys deal and handle with that with clients. And then, you know, one thing that I'm sure our listeners would love to know, we'll get into it next time, is like, what's your favorite part of experimenting as you build these systems, right? You know, we could go on for a while for that, right? So there's so much that we still didn't touch on, but I really want to thank you.
Make the list.
Absolutely.
Make the list.
I definitely want to thank you for taking the time to chat with us today and coming on, because you're right. Integrators really are the glue, and having other people and having integrators all across the country who can sort of, you know, shout to the rooftops and shout to the mountaintops and tell everyone why we're here and what value there is in having an integrator. And really it's the education more than anything, right? If the biggest value with an integrator is education, there's not a question in my mind. That is the biggest service that we offer. So having another advocate for education out there to help sort of push this forward is huge. And hopefully more and more people understand that we really are, integrators are there to help, whether it is your local rep that you're integrator, it's a third party company like yourself, whoever it is, integrators are there to help and move the project forward. So thank you so much for coming on today. We really, really appreciate it. And then I just want to remind everyone. And I just want to remind everyone, today's episode was presented by the LCA, the Lighting Controls Association.
And it's financially supported by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, NAILD. And additionally, check out our website, lightingcontrolspodcast.com. Got all of our episodes, a news feed, and a merch store if you want to support the podcast. Ron's showing off the cup if you're watching the video. If not, sorry for speaking about a cup that you can't see. But also, the Council on Lighting Controls Startup Technicians and Integrations, definitely check us out. If you want to join the council, give us support, or just spread the word, would love to hear from you. But otherwise, thank you so much for joining us. And Bill, again, thank you for joining us. This was a great conversation.